Hello and welcome to the Around the Nation weekly podcast for week two. Thanks for joining us. I'm Pat Coleman.
I'm Keith McMillan.
And we'll wrap up week two action, talk about some of the trends from week two, some analysis, and get you a quick look ahead at week three. And this is our second weekly podcast. And first of all, one of the biggest news items, Heidelberg came into the season riding, if you could say that, a 36-game losing streak, and they finally put that to bed.
Tremendous for them. You know, you can talk about playing for the love of the game all you want, but if you play at a school where you win every week, it's sort of easier to love the game. If you go out there every week and you're playing and just trying to get that win, just trying to, you know, especially the seniors in that program, guys who have endured three consecutive 0-10 seasons, you got to feel great for them. And now with that 36-game streak off the schneid, now maybe they get a chance to get into that OAC schedule and break the 27-game conference losing streak.
Hadn't won since October of 2003 before they beat Oberlin 37-26 on Saturday. And, you know, you had to kind of figure that Mike Hallett coming over from Thomas More would have a positive impact as a coach for Heidelberg at some point during the course of his career. Maybe not necessarily in this first week, though.
Yeah, well, again, we go back to that Mount Union coaching tree. Hallett coming from Mount Union, I think a 94 grad. And you look around where the other guys who've attended Mount Union or been on the coaching staff, where they've ended up, how their programs have gone. Emory and Henry's been successful under Don Montgomery. Washington Jefferson's been a playoff team. Ohio Northern, Co. Everybody that comes from Mount Union pretty much is successful. They bring success with them, and you can sort of foresee maybe things going in the right direction, if not getting it turned around right away at Heidelberg.
Mount Union with the six alumni, of course, including, you know, Larry Karras himself as head coaches in Division III. One of the schools that actually has the most is Springfield. A lot of Springfield alumni as head coaches in Division III, and Springfield kind of got off on the right step, including being on our featured D3 Cast game on Sunday night against Union.
Well, yeah, and that was one of those games that it was sort of tough to get a feel for because Union lost so much of their offense. You know, the school's leading passer, rusher, and receiver, right, not just from last year, right, all time. So, you know, they're kind of working in a new offense, and I think you probably saw a little bit of that last night. And then what does Springfield have beyond Chris Sharp? Can they throw, you know, we know they can run the option and run it basically to perfection, but can they throw the ball? Can they muster enough defense to be one of the Eastern powerhouses?
And I think Chris Sharp came out with a little bit of a surprise with the first pass that he threw was for a long touchdown pass, but he also set the Pride career rushing records for touchdowns with his 51st career score, 224 yards, rushing touchdowns of 40 and 36 yards. I mean, Chris Sharp basically came out firing on all cylinders, kind of as the point guard of that offense, so to speak.
And, you know, when you play Springfield, you kind of know what you're going to get. You're going to see a lot of that option, and with a guy like Chris Sharp back there, not just a guy who's fast and is, well, I just want to say he's experienced in that offense now being a senior. Basically, whatever you throw at him, you know, he probably has an answer for. And I don't expect Springfield to do a lot differently. They're going to rely on Chris Sharp, but I think when they get further down the line, they may have to either muster that defense or find a way to be successful throwing the ball. 35-13 victory over a pretty solid team in Union. They found ways to be successful.
And you can watch the archive of that game, get a little bit of a taste of what Chris Sharp and the triple option offense are all about on the archives at D3Cast.com. A quarterback decision of maybe a little bit different nature. It took place at the end of the Wabash-Franklin game. Franklin had beaten Wabash last season in 2006. Maybe a little bit of a surprise this year. Wabash looking for a little bit of revenge and came down to the end with Dustin Huff, the starting quarterback out there on the hands team, to cover a key onside kick. And things did not really work out very well there.
Especially if Huff's injury becomes serious or is serious, turns out to be, and we think that it is. You know, it's easy to question that decision, but we talked to Dan Garrett last week, the head coach at Kane, and he was saying, you know, he has his star quarterback punting for Kane, and he has some of his star players returning kicks, and he was just saying that, you know, in Division III, you don't necessarily have that depth where you get behind a starter and there's another guy who's of starter quality that you need to get out there on special teams. And if you feel that strongly about special teams, maybe you don't question that decision to put in your best guys out there. If you got a hands team, you put the 11 guys with the best hands. In hindsight, obviously, you wish you didn't have that, especially if you don't have an experienced backup.
Kane was kind of the victim of one of our surprise results this week. Looked good last week, looked really bad this week in losing at Albright.
Well, yeah, and Albright, new coach, got a sophomore quarterback, Tanner Kelly, who passed for 447 yards on Kane. And that was in the 42-17 victory. And we don't know necessarily if Kane, you know, was just a little high on themselves after winning 48-7 last week, but certainly Albright came out with a look that's going to scare a few people. And I think not only that, the whole rest of that conference looked a lot better this week. You know, Delaware Valley gave Wesley a pretty good game, and you had some of the other teams around that conference looking a lot better after a week where they started, I think they lost all six games they played last week.
We'd heard kind of the advanced scouting reports, so to speak, on Kelly, you know, knowing he was coming into his sophomore year. You know, the people who we talked to made it sound like, yeah, Kelly is going to be kind of ready to make a breakout this season, but maybe Albright as a team isn't ready to follow him until 2008. They certainly put a bit of a statement out here in week one, though, after week two, after losing to Salisbury in week one.
Yeah, and not only scoring the 42 points on offense, but holding Kane to 17, we saw how explosive they are. That's a good sign for Albright, and that they look like they played a balanced game yesterday, not just putting up a whole bunch of numbers, where if you look at a team like Guilford, put up 50 points yesterday after putting up 70 in week one, but also allowed 47 points, they may not have that same kind of balance.
Another maybe a little bit less of a surprise, but certainly a surprise at least in the way the rankings shake out, is Redlands going up to 16th ranked Whitworth and winning 24-12. Whitworth working in a new quarterback. Obviously, tight end Michael Allen was drafted into the NFL. There's a lot of new changes on offense, and in the end, Redlands ended up breaking up 9 passes that Whitworth threw in their opener.
Yeah, and that's what happens when you lose a guy that not only is a star quality player, but someone who's been in your offense. You break in a new quarterback, and it's not always immediately successful for Whitworth. You know, that was a 7-point game right there until late in the fourth quarter, and Redlands put up a touchdown with 2:47 to go to make it 24-10, the final 24-12. But that also bodes well, I think, for the Southern California Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, the SCIAC as we like to call it, because we, you know, with California Lutheran and Occidental kind of being a little bit down, also losing their quarterbacks, we expected to see Redlands up a little bit this year, maybe back in that championship mix, and they got off on the right foot with the win against Whitworth.
We talked pretty extensively about Redlands in the preseason when we were doing our 1-238 ranking, the ranking of all Division III teams for kickoff, and I think that we both agreed that we thought Redlands was going to be a bit of a breakout team this year. We did pick them to win the SCIAC, but you know, for any SCIAC team to go up and beat one of the contenders in the Northwest Conference, let alone on the road, is a pretty unusual circumstance these days.
Well, it certainly is, because Northwest Conference has been one of the, you know, three or four strongest conferences in Division III, and when you take a top team from that conference, you sort of expect them to, I don't want to say run over anybody from one, the SCIAC, but you know, you look at the history of the matchups, whether it's a first place team from Northwest or a lower team in the Northwest, you know, playing those games, because there's not that many options to schedule out on the West Coast. A lot of cross play between those two conferences, and the Northwest usually fares pretty well. So I think that's a good sign for Redlands getting into the meat of their schedule to go have that win under their belt.
Couple of meetings between top 25 teams this past week, and neither one of them really turned into much. Wasn't a particularly competitive week, especially if you're Christopher Newport coming off the high of a win in week one against Rowan, then going to Mary Hardin Baylor and losing 51-19 is a really kind of a big swing between week one and week two for Christopher Newport.
Well, and almost the exact opposite of the swing they had last year. They started off with a 32-8 loss to Rowan, came back with the 15-10 home victory over Mary Hardin Baylor. This time, started off with the win against Rowan and then had to travel to Texas, and probably harder than it sounds. You know, long road trips are not very commonplace in Division III, and then to go and play a team of that caliber, I'm sure Mary Hardin Baylor broke down that film from last year and obviously had a beat on what Christopher Newport was trying to do. Christopher Newport scored first, probably still feeling good a little bit off last week, and then 51 unanswered for Mary Hardin Baylor, 500 yards of offense, and only 65 of that was passing yards from Josh Welsh. So you know Mary Hardin Baylor, when they're running the ball for more than 400 yards, they're in their zone doing what they do well.
I think this reflects more poorly even on Rowan than the first week's result did.
Well, if you believe in the value of comparative scores and you say Christopher Newport beat Rowan, then you kind of have to wonder, what does Rowan have going into that New Jersey Athletic Conference schedule, where you have Montclair looking good so far, win over Wilkes yesterday. You have William Patterson, who also beat Wilkes. You have Kane, who good week first week, week one, not so good. And then Cortland, who put up 70 points. You got five teams that are going to give Rowan a little bit of a problem there in that conference, and it's going to be tough for them to run through it, especially coming off that week one loss. Now they got 2 weeks to prepare for this week's game at Wilkes. And now, who would have thought at the beginning of this season that would be matching up two winless teams, Rowan and Wilkes. We thought that would be a battle of maybe top 15 teams.
The other game between top 25 teams this past week, Baldwin-Wallace at home over Augustana 24-8, and in a game, again, the score kind of belies the way the game went. Augustana was not really in this game. And watching some of this game Saturday night on tape delay on one of the regional sports networks, Augustana just really wasn't getting anything going offensively, and Baldwin-Wallace pretty much had an answer for everything the Wing T was doing.
Well, that's certainly what happens when you have played a team once before and you have a tape on them of what they do. And, you know, Baldwin-Wallace played Augustana last year, and that's part of it. But also, Baldwin-Wallace is a team that's pretty much built around its defense. Remember last year, you know, they earned a lot of respect in that loss, 14-0 loss to Mount Union in Division III, who holds Mount Union to 14 points. Brought back seven starters and then another starter who had started a year ago. So brought back eight starters from that defense this year. Held Augustana to 199 yards and forced four turnovers. 24-0 lead in the fourth quarter before Augustana got on the board. So, like you said earlier, game not really as close as maybe even 24-8 makes it seem.
Teams whose names I'm just going to throw out there, get a real quick reaction from you. St. John's down 10-0 at the half at River Falls, comes back to win 21-10.
Yeah, I think St. John's still trying to build its offensive continuity. Remember, losing their main running back in the offseason. They have their quarterback back, but for them to rally in the second half and defensively to hold River Falls off the scoreboard, good sign for them. You know, they'll be in the top five for most of the season, I bet.
And Wesley, I think I'm even less confident in them now after having a rally with 17 points in the fourth quarter to beat Delaware Valley, a team who is going to be really kind of built around its defense if it can do anything this year, because that offense is still really young.
I think the team right now, the guys that are carrying them are Larry Beavers and Michael Clark, the speed receivers, and even tight end John Lynette. I mean, they're obviously being able to rally is nice for their offense, but they need to be a little bit better on defense, I think. Delaware Valley, of course, is a team that's built around its defense. It doesn't have the offensive firepower that it had a couple years ago when G.A. Mangus was running the show and Adam Knobloch was quarterback. So, yeah, that's a team, obviously, that defense did let it down a little bit, letting that fourth quarter rally go.
Looking ahead to this week, Christopher Newport is going to try to bounce back hosting Salisbury. Salisbury's had an interesting couple of weeks. They beat Albright, which, you know, didn't seem like much in week one. Now it seems a little bit more important. They went up to Brockport and handled Brockport last week, which is, you know, something that Salisbury's not been able to do so much with that offense going on the grass.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a team to watch right on the cusp of the top 25 because of who they play. You know, they can earn that respect pretty quickly. They won 40-14 this week against Brockport, and now with a chance to beat Christopher Newport, a team who already has an Eastern, you know, win over an Eastern quote-unquote powerhouse, they can get sort of the trickle-down effects of that victory by winning.
And, of course, an interesting game between two of the teams on islands in Division III, Hardin-Simmons in Texas going to Linfield in Oregon, a game that we'll be attending on Saturday afternoon. Now a game, really, where a loss might be a at-large elimination for the team that loses.
Kind of like we mentioned about the Rowan-Wilkes game, a game that we didn't expect to see teams coming in with losses. Linfield coming off the loss to Division II Western Oregon, and Hardin-Simmons losing at home against Wisconsin Lacrosse in the first week. Now both of those teams need this win. Obviously, they have a chance to still make the playoffs. Hardin-Simmons has an automatic qualifier they can fight for. Linfield not in the same boat yet, so they really maybe need this game a little more. We'll get out there and get a chance to see two pretty much premier teams, I think, in Division III, at least year to year, and one of the great atmospheres, we've been told. And so now we've got to go put some eyes on it and see what it's like out there in Linfield.
Some of the other games, Wesley is at Widener on Friday night. Carnegie Mellon travels to Hobart. A couple of games with bragging rights for the entirety of Division III as second-ranked Wisconsin Whitewater goes to Division II St. Cloud State. Azusa Pacific, which is a traditional NAIA power, comes to sixth-ranked Wisconsin Lacrosse. Ninth-ranked Springfield takes a triple option on the road to Montclair State, and then a meeting of unlikely 2-0 teams under the lights in St. Paul, Minnesota, as unbeaten Carleton travels to unbeaten McAllister. For Keith McMillan, I'm Pat Coleman signing off for our ATN podcast. Don't forget to read more around the nation from Keith McMillan on D3Football.com on Thursdays.